Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming inside on this glorious day. Welcome to our Rockin' the Boat service. It's about the everyday joy of doing social justice. Today is about the ripples we make when we rock the boat, when we live in such a way that answers that small voice inside us that speaks of love and justice. Today is all about honoring the why and how and joyous nature of compassionate action. While many people here and in many other places are deeply involved in global social justice work, we also believe social justice is manifested through our everyday actions that are grounded in love. In song, poetry, and through personal stories, we will explore the deep changes we make in the world through both deep kindness and caring action, and how the many hearts and the many voices here and elsewhere shape this, our one world. So this is a story about ripples, about what happens, and you don't even know you've made a difference until years later. So once upon a time, not all so long ago, a brother and a sister decided they wanted to have a party. They were twins, and it was summer, and it felt like a fun thing to do. So they helped people garden, they washed cars, they got a little bit of extra money, and they decided what they were going to have, and they decided they would have lemonade with fizzy water, because that sounded like fun, and cupcakes with gummy worms, because that's even better. And they had money left over for a great big watermelon. So they invited their friends. All their friends came, and they lived in a house that had a creek at the backyard. So they all went down to the creek, and they played in the water, and they looked for fish, and somebody almost caught a frog. And then they decided they were hungry, so they went running back. And the twins got there first, and they looked at the table, and they thought, I'm sure there were more cupcakes here, and some of the watermelons missing. And then the brother nudged the sister, and he pointed like this without saying anything. And underneath a big tree, there was a little girl sitting there, and she was eating, and she was all like this underneath the tree. So they didn't say anything, and they had their party, and everybody ate their stuff, and it was all good. And then people went home, and then the twins decided they'd go check on that little girl. So they went over to the tree, and she was asleep. And she was, you know, a little bit too thin, and her clothes were really, had too many holes in them for just fun, because sometimes it's just fun to have holes in your clothes. So, and she woke up when the twins were there. And she looked scared, and she said, I'm sorry, I took your food, please don't be mad. Well, the twins were kind of surprised, because in their family and in their community, people cared for one another, and they spread that circle of kindness out into the world. They wanted to help, they weren't mad. So they gave the girl a drink and some more food, and asked a little bit about her story. She was surprised they weren't mad. She felt safe. And she just said her family was having a hard time and they were visiting and they would be leaving soon. The twins gave her a hug and they left. Years went by. This little girl grew up, never forgot that day by the creek and the loving actions of the twins. One of the things the twins had done had given her their special toonie. It was a very special coin that they'd found one time by the creek, and they gave it to her so she would feel like there was something special. She kept that toonie as her lucky coin to remind her of the goodness in the world, even on sad days. She became a teacher and had her own family. One day she was with her kids at the park, and a little boy came up and snatched a sandwich from their picnic. When she put her hand on his arm, he said, I'm sorry, I took your food, please don't be mad. The woman who used to be the sad little girl by the creek smiled and said, in our family and in our community, we care about one another and spread this kindness out into the world. here, have a cool drink and tell me your story. And he did. The world seems to be in quite a mess these days. Where do we even start? How do we make a difference? Well, in all my years of working in social justice through the work and as a journalist, I found three really important things, the ingredients to making this work happen. Passion, time, it always takes longer than you think, and a good sense of humor. The Women's March was a serious business done with incredible joy. I've been on lots of marches, and it took me a while to figure out what was different. And it was the great signs, for one thing. And there was humor and joy happening. Didn't mean that people weren't serious about the issues. It just meant we were coming together with the joy of the work. And that has stayed with me. Wonderful. So here's a story, a short story, about one of the first women I knew that had all those qualities. Her name was Thelma, and she lived in Port Coquitlam. She was a grandma. She used to be an accountant. She retired, and she was enjoying herself. She had lots of grandkids. They lived right by the dividing line with Pitt Meadows. It was beautiful and green. And one day, there was a low-flying plane that swooped over her yard. And she didn't pay much attention to it, and then she looked at it and went back outside, and her picnic table was covered with sticky stuff. And she thought, what the heck? So she was... And then she looked around, and she phoned a neighbor, and everybody's yards were covered with this sticky sort of... So she phoned, because Thelma was if not persistent, council, and said, what the heck is this? Well, this was quite a few years ago, and the blueberry fields that were right next door were spraying a herbicide for a disease called mummy berry. And they were aerial spraying. They were allowed to do that in those days. And, of course, aerial spraying drift goes everywhere. And the way they would come in over her yard, it was over her yard, the playground, the park, and it all got covered in. So Thelma thought, well, I'll just tell people this is not a good idea, and they'll stop. Most of us know how that works. So she put on her uniform, she called it. It was just wonderful. She had what they called a twin set, you know, the matching sweater, and she had her pearls. And she would go to council with her twin set on. She had a blue one that was absolutely gorgeous. And she would tell the council members that, really, what were they doing? And unfortunately, it didn't work. They smiled at her and went, oh, grandma, nice little grandma, isn't she cute? Which was really a mistake. And so she went to the neighboring municipalities, and then she talked to the provincial government, and she went on and on. And then, because that's the way she was, she got informed about this particular herbicide and what damage it does and how it's a hormone disruptor and all that kind of thing. And this took another year. And just before they were going to spray again, because they spray in the spring, just before they were going to spray again, she had a big party. And because no one had listened, and they were all just, this was... the economy, jobs, you know, sounds familiar, right? So she had this big party in her yard with all her neighbors. They rented a helium balloon machine and hundreds of balloons and lots of string. And they had a barbecue, and they all blew up balloons. And then they took at least 10 home, everybody, and attached them all over their yards. And the strings were about 50 feet long. It was beautiful. I mean, it was just this amazing. It looked like a circus had come to town. It was just all these balloons. But the amazing thing is that Thelma had found out that if there's any obstacles 50 feet, the planes can't fly over. They did this for 3 years. And finally, councils passed the bylaws. They couldn't aerial spray. They had to spray by hand. And now, 40-some years later, most of those farms have gone organic where they use integrated pest management. So, thank you, Thelma. Now I'd like to invite Margot up.
I am co-chair of Choices in Dying, Victoria, which is a team of SRC. When I was 21 years old, a long time ago, I was living in Montreal. I went to visit a woman who had been our next door neighbor all through my childhood. Laura had been very active in the town of St. Anne de Bellevue, where we lived, entertaining McDonald College students, visiting soldiers in the military hospital, and playing skip up at the curling club. Now she was in a nursing home. I found her just lying in bed, very frail, oh, so thin, seemingly helpless, somewhat blind and deaf. I had to put my ear almost to her mouth to hear her faint voice. What I heard was, "Marco, I don't want to go on living like this." I didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do, so I did nothing. But I did feel guilty, and I still do. That moment has stayed with me for the past 67 years. Today, if Laura were in Victoria, she might be able to access medical assistance in dying, known as MAID, M-A-I-D. We're fortunate here because Island Health is doing everything it can to ensure that we have real choices at the end of life. If Laura's own doctor did not feel comfortable administering MAID, there are three doctors who advertise themselves as willing to do so. But they will do only what they are sure is legal. And while we do have in Canada a law permitting MAID, the safeguards are more restrictive than what the Supreme Court said was our constitutional right. Laura is eligible for MAID if her condition is irremediable, which it was. If it causes her unbearable suffering, which it did, and if her death is reasonably foreseeable. A vague phrase, to be sure, but it seems to be excluding patients with conditions like ALS and multiple sclerosis. I am not sure whether Laura's medical condition of extreme frailty would qualify or not. To me, her death seemed foreseeable. To her, it seemed interminable. So, what is being done to change the law? Julia Lamb is a woman who suffers from spinal muscular atrophy, which is a progressive neurodegenerative disease. But according to the law, her death is not reasonably foreseeable. She may go on living for years, gradually deteriorating and suffering more and more. She, together with the BC Civil Liberties Association, has launched a legal appeal to have this restrictive clause removed from the legislation. The appeal is still in the preparatory stage, but the time will come when you will again be asked to make your voice heard to permit freedom of choice for those who suffer unbearably. Ever since the time of Sue Rodriguez, the Unitarian Church in Canada has spoken up for those who suffer unbearably and irremediably. They deserve a choice, whether that be intensive care, palliative care, or assisted dying. It's the choice that is the person's right. Nobody says the choice should be made, but MAID should be available as one of the choices. To be able to choose is what Choices in Dying Victoria stands for. And I thank all of you who have given so much support since its inception 5 years ago. Unfortunately, the battle is not over. The work is not finished. It needs to continue. so that Julia Lamb will not have to face the dying process that Laura had to endure. Now we are going to hear our lovely chamber choir sing a song which happens to be about life's ending. Nick Fairbank has put to music a poem by my favorite poet, Gerald Manley Hopkins, in whose poetry the sound of the words is as important as the sense. And this is the poem, Heaven Haven. I have desired to go where springs not fail, to fields where flies no sharp and sided hail, and a few lilies blow. And I have asked to be where no storms come, where the green swell is in the havens dumb, and out of the swing of the sea.
Yeah, morning everybody. I'm Judy Gaylord. I've remembered all my buttons, but I forgot my name tag. Anyway, so the question we were asked to consider for our piece in this service was, what am I passionate about and what have I done about it? And also to include examples of joy in the work. Now, I had some trouble with this because over quite a long lifetime, I've been involved in an awful lot of issues. It will probably come as no surprise to a number of you to know that that is my T-shirt. And that's only about a quarter of the buttons that I have at home. But both of these T-shirts, the one I'm wearing here and the one there, I think they have significant slogans. This one says, if you love something, stand up for it. This one, the Tommy Douglas one, says, courage, my friends, 'tis not too late to build a better world. And I think both of those things really are a good guide for us putting our Unitarian principles into action. So, trying to focus in on some stuff, I'll just give a couple of anecdotes about some early environmental actions I was involved in. About 40 years ago, I helped to organise the first ever glass recycling collection in Bristol. We volunteered to have the bin outside our house on New Year's morning, thinking that people would have lots of empties to get rid of after the night before. Well, little did we know they'd start doing that at 5 o'clock in the morning. But it was so successful that later on our group got a glass recycling contract from the Bristol World Wine Fair. A large number of the discarded bottles still contained wine. Our workforce was hired on a grant for unemployed youth, and we had some trouble keeping them sober enough to get through the day. But we trained some of them to recognize and retrieve the really high-end stuff. We had some very good parties every night, and I've never again had a chance to imbibe that much quality wine. So that was a good one from way back. So I've been an almost lifelong cyclist, the more so, of course, since it seems one of the most useful personal actions to reduce my carbon footprint. It's also an incredible way to feel connected to the interdependent web, especially at this time of year if I can find a nice, quiet, green route. Locally, most of our collective CO2 emissions come from transportation. So here at the church, our environment team decided it was high time to encourage those who cycle here by providing good bike parking. And thanks to your generous Share the Plate contributions, we were able to install two racks, one next to the Montessori entrance and a covered one near the office, which is mostly used by staff and volunteers. It was a community process. Some of the youth had fun clearing the site, and then there was a great celebration and blessing of the bikes when we formally opened the new shelter. Reverend Sharna even wrote us some bike beatitudes. So, and I'm actually going to interject a little commercial at this point because the environment seems also constantly looking on for other ways to reduce our carbon footprint and encourage people not to drive cars, at least not single occupancy vehicles. And as many of you may know, the Dar Levy, who was coordinating a rideshare program, has stepped down from that. So it would be awfully nice if somebody else would like to get involved in that. So if you're at all interested, please see me afterwards. So end of commercial. Back to more bike stuff. I've served on the Saanich Bicycle Advisory Committee for a number of years. and one of our main ongoing concerns has been making it safe to cycle on Shelbourne Street. Last month, after 8 years of planning process and public engagement, the Shelbourne Valley Action Plan was finally approved by Saanich Council at 11:30 at night, at which point a couple of us literally danced in the aisles, so maybe this would be the point to demonstrate, but well, maybe not. I'm not a good dancer. Anyway, so those were some examples of environmental progress at the local level. But for actions on the big issues, bigger boats have to be rocked. Your environmental action team, with the support of your signatures on our letters and petitions, has been trying for years to influence the environmental policies of the provincial and federal governments. And incidentally, thank you very much for the 102 of you that signed our petition in support of halting work on Site C last month. That really encourages us. It often seems like the only way to change policies is to change the government. There's no joy quite like an election night when it seems like change is really happening. For example, after the 2015 federal election, the Enbridge pipeline was defeated and our scientists were unmuzzled. So on May the 9th, the boat of the provincial government was at least rocked, and I suspect many of you were part of that process. As we gather this morning, we still don't know if the boat will end up listing to the right or to the left, or if there will be a major course change. However, I have some hope that we'll soon be having a seriously joyful celebration of a greener and more compassionate future in our province.
Okay, it's time for a little participation here. So this is the sort of offering section of things. As you can see, we don't have our candles. We're going to do cluties. So we're offering you a bit of a visual for our quiet time today. You can see these arbutus branches on the tables. There's little bowls with strips. And as you see, like the kids did, they tied them onto the tree. Now, feel free to tie whatever you want or more than one. When we were doing this, we decided we would do white if you had a care and concern of a particular person that you wanted to lift up. Red for a particular compassionate action that you were lifting up. Green for the honor of the earth. Blue if there was some sorrow that you wanted to lift up. And the multicolored for a little bit of everything. Feel free to do more than one. So each thread, like you can see with the kids there, is a little small visual symbol of the difference that we can make in the world. And after we're all done, these bare branches will be filled with color. And this is how it works in the world. This is what we just can't see it as often as we can see this. So we wanted to remind you that all these actions that you do, the ripples that you cause in your life through your actions, through your kindness, through your dedication to things, even if you can't see them, they ripple out for years and years. So feel free to speak a word or two while you're doing your tying. The ushers will, wherever they are, will start passing the baskets. Our Share the Plate recipient is Aboriginal Neighbours. We'll have some lovely music by Nick, and feel free to just come up, tie your bit of light onto the world. As we unite, the world unites. Christine.
All these tall people around. Oops. The key issues for me are what is happening overseas, which affects us here in Canada. Why is this my passion? Why do I respond so often to the role of the underdog on the international scene? Is it because my father worked as a missionary for 19 years in Central Africa, where I was born? My earliest years were spent on a Scottish Presbyterian mission in northern Malawi, on a high plateau overlooking the Great Rift Valley of Africa. Malawi is a small country between Tanzania and Zambia. My dad was a minister and he also ran the teacher training college. This included visits to the neighboring villages and schools, and sometimes we went along. My earliest friends were Goli and Senior. I remember them vividly, the twin sons of the gardener. Some of my earliest words were Ngoma, Maji, namely corn and water, the staple food and drink. Again, I've never forgotten these words. My fears were the snakes in the local bamboo bushes and the crocodiles in the lake. I mostly ran barefoot. Since then, I've returned to Malawi and also visited many of the African countries where the need is still great. Like my family, I've traveled a lot and also studied geography. Many of you have also traveled a lot, and so I found a lot of support here for all the many international projects I'm part of, such as Child Haven, the Unitarian Service Committee, the UU United Nations Office, the Zoe Gardner Fund, and so on. My mother and us children ended up being war evacuees in Scotland, a much easier role than that of refugee. But I have found refugees in the Middle East have long interested me. From a major concern with oppressed Palestinian refugees to those millions suffering from this messy war in Syria and Iraq. Though we are still waiting for our Syrian family, I got to know our single Iranian refugee, Sunny, who was selected by the local Canadian embassy as needing a safe home. Sunny is very reticent about her past persecution, but she told me she had learned to trust no one. For a moment, if you could imagine, what's it like to trust no one? A very lonely feeling, is it not? She feels she has to work hard and depend only on herself. The first few weeks here, she was constantly on the cell phone to her buddies back in Turkey, and later to her mother and brother. Her father, no. So I felt our first job here was for her to build trust in us, slowly and sensitively. To meet her, she may seem smart and savvy, well-groomed and confident, but that hides a very vulnerable and shy young adult who is appreciative of all we have done for her. She's been studying hard at Camosun and is now working and saving to go to the university to study the technical side of music production, where she has some background. Those of us involved have found our refugee project to be very rewarding. I feel I have received as much as I have given. Several of you met Sunny at camp last summer, and others met the Syrian family who visited us from Salt Spring. I've also enjoyed meeting two other families here in Victoria. Another rich reward for me is the networking and training with the other churches and organizations. Most fascinating. Would I have met so many Muslims and visited the mosque so frequently? And exchanging ideas with the many Christian groups who share our belief that a religion has to show compassion in action. Otherwise, it's self-centered. Indeed, social action and social charity are key aspects for me in being a Unitarian. My passion is to remain connected to the big, needy world overseas, as well as locally, to do whatever we can to show empathy and practical help for others, and to feel joy in so doing.
The issue that most concerns me is democracy, for the simple reason it is basic to improvement in every other area of social justice, from alleviation of poverty and homelessness, which you've heard about, through choices in dying, the welcoming of refugees, the economy and distribution of wealth, to the protection of the environment, and more. Government policy or assistance is vital to every one of those issues. But our Canadian democracy is in such poor state that getting improvement is difficult. How can we improve our democracy, especially when the reigning governments don't want improvement? Ironically, it was Premier Gordon Campbell of the BC Liberals who handed us an issue on a platter, electoral reform. A BC Citizens' Assembly on electoral reform was pulled together in 2004. But you know the sad story of what happened after that. The two major political parties didn't want change, so the government raised the bar for implementation of a new voting system to 60%, a level it thought impossible for proponents of electoral reform to achieve. Voters very nearly did achieve it, though, approving a single transferable vote by over 58%. So a second referendum was called. But now the opposing forces were organized, and with misinformation, fear-mongering, and worse, they persuaded the electorate to turn down reform. The near success of the first referendum arose in part through the efforts of a few members of the Citizens' Assembly. In Victoria, those people were Wendy Bergerud and Diana Byford. Wendy took the lead. She was a jolly, rotund, intelligent statistician who worked for the BC government, and she did not suffer fools gladly. So what to do now? A third referendum would not be called for some time. But Wendy knew it would be a shame to let the teams disperse that she had pulled together to try to get the first two referendums passed. So she formed the Victoria chapter of Fair Vote Canada, whose members met once a month at 5 o'clock in Swan's Pub for discussion and banter about different electoral systems and what strategy would be best to achieve success the next time an opportunity arose. These pub nights were educational, fun, and kept members of the Victoria chapter ready to spring into action. The next opportunity arose in 2015 when the Liberal Party of Canada won the federal election and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau promised that this election would be the last using the first-past-the-post system. You know, Mr. Trudeau broke that promise. The anger that created among members of Fair Vote Canada and many other Canadians began to swing the opinion of the general public. Trudeau's excuse for backing down on his promise was that there was insufficient interest in electoral reform. Recent polls have shown that voter support for proportional representation is now between 63 and 70%. Trudeau's Liberals had won a majority government with just 39.6% support. Did I mention that Canada's democracy is in a poor state? Then this year, the BC Liberals called a provincial election, and members of the Victoria chapter of Fair Vote Canada, with the help from others, got the BC New Democrats to agree to implement proportional representation should they gain power. The BC Green Party was already on side. As you know, the results of the election for the moment hang in the balance. At a recent pub night meeting of the Victoria chapter of Fair Vote Canada, a member asked, "What do we do now if we lose again?" Someone replied, "We continue with pub nights." And another quickly added, "And stay drunk until the next election." Unfortunately, Wendy will never see success. She developed breast cancer about 3 years ago, that subsequently metastasized, and she died in March 2016. But she left a vibrant and dedicated team to carry on the fight. Wendy's legacy to change the voting system is in good hands.
And last but certainly not least, and Claire.
Most of you know I'm the other part of the VIPON team, so you probably will not be surprised to hear that I'm part of the poverty team. About 13 years ago, I was approached by a longtime member of our community. She told me that members of the Cabra Bay United Church had four teams of people who once a week cooked a meal for the people at what was then known as the Upper Room. She wondered why our Social Responsibility Committee didn't do this the same for Sandy Merriman House, an emergency shelter for homeless women and women at risk. The committee members of the time thought it was a good idea, so we went through all the hoops of getting the Capital Region Department's authority to use our sanctuary kitchen as a commercial kitchen. Several of us formed a team, and once a month we cooked three casseroles big enough for about 75 women and had a lot of fun doing it. They were then delivered by one of our members to Sandy Merriman House. All these years later, this program is still going on. A great achievement, which resulted from one person's idea. I think one favorite poet of every Unitarian is Mary Oliver, and she always has something good to say about life. This is moments. There are moments that cry out to be fulfilled, like telling someone you love them, or giving your money away, all of it. Your heart is beating, isn't it? You're not in chains, are you? There is nothing more pathetic than caution when headlong might save a life, even possibly your own.
Well, we've come to the end of this lovely day. Thank you, everyone, for your stories, wonderful stories, and the music. Always terrific. So we're leaving you with another little twist, of course. It's a little bit of a twist on the Buddhist metta-kindness practice. So as you leave and as you go along in your week, in all that you do, as you let that driver into the space in front of you, as you march for a clean earth, as you struggle to write yet another letter to your MLA, as you offer comfort to someone else's child, may you know deep inside that these are the actions that do truly change our world, these intentions made real that create this, our beautiful unfolding universe. May you all be safe in body, mind, and heart. May you be well in body, mind, and heart. May you know ease in body, mind, and heart. May there be joy woven into everything you do. So may it be.